Around the time of the Kinko's incident, Mitnick became a true fugitive, and his lifestyle descended accordingly. He moved from city to city and took on a false identity in each new place. He paid for goods in cash. He didn't own a car. He typically moved to university towns, rented a furnished apartment in the student district, and took a job with a hospital or clinic, usually as a computer troubleshooter. He was in Colorado for a time, then moved on to Seattle. The fact that computers had gotten much smaller and more powerful helped make the operation mobile. Mitnick could get a lot of hacking done with an inexpensive laptop, a cellular phone, and a modem. He apparently took precautions to hide his tracks by routinely cloning new numbers, reprogramming a phone with purloined serial numbers, and routing his calls through far-flung dialing areas. Getting onto the internet was easy enough. He just dialed a local internet service provider and logged on, presumably by gaining full privileges on the system and keeping a low profile by using a little-used account. From there, the world was his oyster. The internet has a feature called Telnet, a remote login program that allows users to hop from computer to computer all over the world. Not long after going into hiding, Mitnick struck up a rather bizarre relationship with one of his hacking targets, Neil Michael Clift, an unassuming 30-year-old software engineer in Stockport, England. Clift is the computer security hobbyist who spends much of his spare time studying security flaws in VMS. For years, he has shared his findings in an informal arrangement with Digital, and this earned him Mitnick's close attention. Mitnick's interest in Clift began in the 1980s, when Mitnick was intercepting internal electronic mail traveling among Digital employees. During his regular perusal of their messages, he discovered Clift as a rich source of security bug secrets, and began to work on getting into Clift's machines directly. The night before Mitnick's first major arrest back in 1988, he had been busy beating a path into Clift's computers. It seems he just put a bookmark there, with the intention of someday picking up where he had left off. Mitnick resumed his pursuit of Clift in early 1993, posing this time as a well-known Digital engineer. He called Clift up and poured on the flattery. He explained that the company was going to be recruiting engineers and wanted to know if Clift would be interested. Clift told him to send him email at a computer in Loughborough. Mitnick then began sending Clift email, posing this time as a different Digital engineer. To draw Clift in, he offered him a lot of information that Clift recognized as proprietary to Digital. Clift was fooled. Before long, they had exchanged decryption keys so that each could read the other's encoded transmissions. Mitnick asked for and got nearly every security flaw that Clift had discovered in recent months. After some weeks of exchanging email with the imposter, Clift asked him a few pointed technical questions. When his correspondent seemed slightly adrift, he grew suspicious. He probed the path the mail was taking and saw it wasn't going to a computer at Digital at all, but was being forwarded to a machine at the University of Southern California. Clift immediately suspected Mitnick. He knew Mitnick had been out of jail for some time. But it was too late. If this was Mitnick, he already had conned Clift out of scores of interesting security tidbits. Embarrassed and in fear of losing his job, Clift cut off the correspondence. Then, in summer of 1994, Mitnick rang Clift up, not just once, but every day for weeks, both at Clift's work and home. Clift took the calls, partly because he wanted to hear just how much Mitnick knew. Surprisingly candid, Mitnick told Clift how he had gotten into his machines and bragged in detail about how he had tracked him down. He told Clift that he had full, albeit unauthorized, access to computers at Netcom and The Well, two internet service providers based in California, and was using them as his launchpad to other computers. He recited a litany of the many programs he had stolen from Clift and Digital over the years. Mitnick's daring impressed Clift, but his technical skills didn't. He spoke to me at the start, hoping that I would teach him how to find security problems himself, Clift said. He thought there was some kind of trick to finding them. He just didn't realize that it takes a great deal of hard work to find them, and you have to be technically proficient. It appeared to Clift that Mitnick's skill lay in sniffing out work done by others. From what he had heard about Mitnick through the years, Clift had expected to encounter a maniac, but Mitnick was friendly and relaxed, hardly an edgy criminal. Their conversations occasionally lasted 3, 4, even 5 hours. Mitnick interrupted the conversations to replace the batteries in the cellular phone he was using. Mitnick seemed to enjoy the fact that he had pissed people off. He obviously enjoyed the one-upmanship, Clift recalled. He can think his way round what people know or do, but probably can't see how much he upsets them or how much trouble he causes them. Clift told Kevin how much he had feared for his job. Kevin apologized and said it was nothing personal. Mitnick's spirits never seemed down except when he was in financial straits. Money got very tight, he told Clift, but when he got paid a couple of $100 for an interview with a small British magazine, he spent most of it on a 1,500-page manual on the inner workings of the VMS operating system. Mitnick inquired of Clift which parts he should read. When Clift suggested he read the entire book, Clift recalls, "That didn't sit well. The internals book came to signify his investment in technical skill." When Clift accused Kevin of being interested in nothing more than how to break into systems, Mitnick nearly shouted into the phone, "Well, I bought that fucking book, didn't I?" At the same time, Kevin was still using the Lofbrock computers to exchange email with Clift and Michael Laurie, a friend of Clift's. In an attempt to learn more about him, Clift and Laurie had decided to give Mitnick his own account on the machine. It was a risky decision because Mitnick crashed the computer at will. According to Laurie, he routinely altered files, stole other users' identities, and killed users' jobs and data. Laurie gradually got fed up and sent Mitnick a message telling him he would be happy to see him rot in jail. The phone conversations with Clift continued. Clift had come to look forward to them. He had done his share of opening up to Mitnick as well, but what Clift didn't tell Mitnick was that he had enlisted the help of the FBI. Somehow Mitnick found out, and when he did, he was furious and hurt. He had erected a friendship, at least by his definition, and had taken a great risk in doing so. "You are a paranoid bastard," he wrote to Clift. "Thanks a lot for contacting Digital and informing on me about Israel. You really underestimate my contacts. I know more than I let on. Too bad we can't be friends. That would have been nice. But all you want to do is help them bust me."